What do you want them to take away from the experience?
The relationships, the connections, watching the veteran guys go about their business, how they prepare, their routine, how they develop those routines was basically the biggest takeaway, how to lead by example, you know, not only with what you say, but by your actions. And that was some of the messages that was said to them.
All right, we're back. So weekends of Grapefruit League action. We just talked about a little bit about the Mets' reluctance to bring another starter in. And one last thing on this, and I think this is where it's so important if they want to compete this year. And the way you're going to get this is, and the way they're trying to get this is, they're hoping that Manaea and Severino develop back into those, into what I'm about to describe, into those kind of pitchers. But when you have a rotation full of six-inning, three-run type guys, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, they'll keep you in the game. You hand it over to the bullpen. Big hit late. Bullpen takes over. You win the game 4-3, 5-3. I mean, it's a blueprint that every team uses, and you have to use on a lot of nights. It's not like, even if you're Max Scherzer, sometimes he would only go six innings, pitch counts and whatnot. But when you have the kind of pitchers that are not Max Scherzer, that are not Jacob deGrom, that are not that top of the rotation, which maybe even Kodai Senga is not quite that. You know, we don't know. What happens with teams that don't have those pitchers is they tend to go on long losing streaks, and they don't have that guy that could come in and lock it down. Chris Bassitt was a perfect example of that guy in 2022, because when they had no deGrom and they had no Scherzer, you knew Bassitt was going to go out there for the most part and give you seven strong innings. So if you had a lousy couple of days and he was on the mound, you knew it would stop the losing streak. Six-inning, three-run, you know, lower end of the rotation, mid-tier rotation guys, they don't always pitch well against elite offenses. They don't always pitch well on the road. There's a lot of pitfalls that those guys run into where when they're at the end of the year, they have an ERA of whatever, 4.2, 4.5, which is not bad. But if you start going into their game log and their line score, you see these swaths of games that maybe they were non-competitive. Bartolo Colon, at the end of his career, as much as he was a really valuable member of the rotation, he would inevitably have those kind of lousy games. And it really hurt his overall numbers because at times he was about league average to below league average in totality, but he was so much better than that when you watch them because he would have four or five really good starts and then a couple of stinkers that outweighed maybe the success he had in those five starts. So when you're bringing in a Montgomery, who I believe has arrived as a top-of-the-rotation option, the feeling is those guys won't have those kind of outings. You could rely on that guy going into Atlanta and pitching a big game. Now, Severino could become that guy. He's dialing it up to 98. You saw that in spring training. Maybe Manaea, he cut his hair. He's going the DeGrom route. Maybe he picks up a couple of more miles per hour. I mean, DeGrom cut his hair. He took his game to the next level. Work for DeGrom? I guess it could work for Manaea. We'll see. But anyway, that's my last point. I find it so peculiar. And I will say, when Montgomery signs, and if he signs for a crazy contract that someone gives him out there, Aaron Nola's seven-year deal, maybe it'll lessen the Mets' blow for them not being involved. But I would be curious to see Stearns's or somebody do some reporting on why they don't like Montgomery. What do they feel is wrong with Montgomery? Because I don't understand it. But anyway, all right. So it's been a really long time. And you heard Carlos Mendoza in the clip coming in talk about the kids, the Acunas, the Gilberts, the Jet Williams. You could throw in the Hamels and the Tyler Stewarts and the Christian Scotts and the Mike Vasil, the pitchers. It's been a long time that I've been able to, this early in spring training, the first week. Now, these kids have all been sent to minor league camp. So the next time you hear from them, it's going to be as a call-up at some point, or whatever they're doing down in the minor leagues. You know, maybe they don't get a call up, but how they develop for 2025. But I was thinking, as I saw Gilbert get go the other way and get an RBI single, and Acuna showing off some of his speed out there, his defensive prowess up the middle, playing second with Lindor, Jet Williams with his speed and his smoothness as a shortstop, and who knows where he's going to wind up when it's all said and done. He could be an outfielder. Some think his best position is center field. So you talk about versatility. These kids, Acuna and Jet Williams and Gilbert, have versatility. But from an offensive perspective, I haven't seen this much excitement over young positional players in the Mets organization maybe since Wright and Reyes. I mean, think about it. I guess Blasting's Millage would fall into that. Carlos Gomez maybe back then, if you want to throw those two guys in there. I mean, think about it. Alonso and McNeil snuck up on us. McNeil did, for sure. But even though Alonso had power during his time in the minors, it wasn't until he hit AA with McNeil and started mashing. And really, there was always skepticism about how good Alonso was going to be. Even in AAA, and he played in Vegas, which nobody takes those numbers seriously. He played in Vegas, and people still thought, well, maybe Dom Smith is going to be the solution. Pete's going to be the traded guy. Not the hype that you're seeing with how excited, and even scouts talking about Gilbert being Lenny Dykstra with power, Acuna and his defensive skills and his speed. And you look, just forget about Jet Williams, who's a complete wild card. That's the guy that probably isn't going to be around this year, but you can see having a big year in AA and providing speed and defense and versatility and an offensive profile that makes the Mets midseason say, can we ignore this kid any longer? Especially if Amarte looks shot. Especially if McNeil does not return to his batting title form and is more of a singles-hitting, below-league average, streaky utility guy, especially if that's the case. And at what point does even a Harrison Bader, who rebounds to play every day and doesn't get hurt, in reality, he's at best a league average hitter, at best with elite defense, who might be ticketed for the rest of his career to be maybe a fourth outfielder. It's possible. When do those things come into play? At what point? And if you're looking down at AAA and you see Gilbert hitting like Michael Conforto down there and Acuna doing a good impression of Jose Reyes, and Jet Williams all of a sudden being the real stud of them, where you're like, I can't ignore these kids. It's almost like an energy shot mid-season. So depending on where the Mets are at, you know, maybe they're muddling around with the muck and the wild card. Maybe they're surprising and leading one of the wild card spots. Maybe they're completely out of it. No matter what the situation is at that point, these kids are going to be, at least on the offensive side, a big storyline. I believe even the pitchers at some point are going to be a big storyline, because the 2025 Mets, as they continue to try to build and maybe go out and play in the deep end of the free agent pool next offseason, whether that be re-signing Alonso, Alex Bregman for third base, a Soto union, who knows, maybe get back in with Zach Wheeler if he doesn't re-sign with the Phillies, Walker Buehler. There's so many possibilities on both the pitching and the offensive side, but in order to commit to those dollars, and they will be big dollars, these kids are going to have to come in and provide every day above average to, you know, hopefully all, near all-star status, maybe greater if it goes that way, at a league minimum cost. And look, a lot of what you see out of Gilbert, really, I mean, why can't he be another Michael Conforto? 25 home runs, 80, 85 RBIs with good defense. I mean, Conforto had a great arm. It sounds like Gilbert's even better, and he could play center. But Conforto was a little miscast as a center fielder. Didn't do poorly, but that wasn't his primary position. Acuna, I know it's maybe, you know, baseball sacrilegious here to compare him to Reyes, but I mean, with that speed, I mean, that's a guy. Maybe he's not his brother in terms of power, but his brother's out there stealing 70 bases. Why can't he, in the current, you know, two-pickoff, three-pickoff rule era of baseball? And then there's Jet Williams. I mean, how many players can be elite in center and up the middle and hit with power with his size? I mean, people have compared him, scouts have compared him to Jose Altuve. Now, this is all really fun things to say at the beginning of March, beginning of spring training. It's all mental bubblegum. There's nothing about it that we can prove it's going to happen. But there is some reason to believe and get excited that those names that I evoke, the Confortos with Gilbert and the Reyeses with Acuna and, you know, Altuve with Jet Williams, scouts see some of those same exciting characteristics that those players have in these young players, which should completely transform the Mets offense on the fly. If Marte's shot, if Bader is an albatross in their lineup and they can't carry that glove because he's so bad offensively and he's always hurt. If McNeil, indeed, his best days are behind him because now he's got bicep issues, he's got ligament issues in his elbow. Who knows? You know, what version of McNeil? It's on again, off again with McNeil. Are you going to get the on again version because you got the off again version that you got in 21 and 23 last year? So we'll see about that. But I'm very excited. I think it's legitimately so, and it's okay to get excited. I know prospects have burnt Mets fans in the past, whether it be Generation K or, you know, the injuries to Reyes, or how frustrating at times the four aces, the Harvey, the Wheeler, the DeGrom, the Mats, because they, even when they pitched well, they never really pitched well at the same time altogether at top of rotation level. And of course, injuries did them in as well. So it'll be really interesting. Now, we announced the Darren Reed Award last Sunday, and early returns are such that we may have someone out of the gate that is leading the way for this award. And a big week for Trace Thompson. Now, Trace Thompson is someone who you may know more for what his brother does on the basketball court than anything he's done in baseball for the Dodgers or the White Sox. But he's the brother of Klay Thompson, member of the Golden State Warriors, All-Star, Hall of Famer probably. His father, Michael Thompson, played for the Showtime Lakers. Great basketball pedigree in that family. Now, Trace was signed as a minor league free agent. I don't know what kind of opt-outs, what kind of contract he has here. But the bottom line is, in his career, he's been wildly inconsistent, former numbered second-round pick. But a couple of years ago, in 2022, he had a really great run at the Dodgers where he was putting up tremendous numbers, hitting home runs, hitting for power, driving in runs. I even think he got a big hit against the Mets in that wild game that Medina wound up saving in extra innings that day. If I'm not mistaken, he might have tied the game off of Seth Lugo. I do remember him being in the middle of a ninth inning rally or something along those lines. But Trace Thompson, 6 RBIs, a couple of home runs this week. Don't get too excited. What's really interesting now is if you go to Baseball Reference and you look at the spring training stats, for any player, they have at the very end a number called opponent's quality. And I don't know how the hell they do this, but basically they show you a number from 1 to 10, an average, and it tells you the numbers that are being produced in the spring is against this level of quality. So right now, whether it be Beatty or Vientos or Trace Thompson or G-Man Choi, another name I'm going to bring up in a couple of minutes, most of them are playing at the, all combined at double-A level competition. So you really can't get crazy about the numbers. And I think that's where even Stearns has talked about it. They're going to make decisions on a ton of other things. I mean, Adrian Hauser talked about it. He got hit a little bit hard today. He's like, well, I was working on stuff. Didn't like the results, but I was working on stuff. And away you go. So, I mean, spring training, and I said this last week, more than ever, it's like inter-squad practice. Like, there is no desire to win. I think back when I started watching baseball, winning in the spring wasn't the end-all be-all, but it was still kind of important. Like, you wanted to build an expectation of winning, and the starters probably stayed in a little bit longer. And as the spring went on, the starting pitchers went a little bit deeper. And I know some of that will happen this spring, but I mean, you even heard Brandon Nimmo talk about it. I mean, he feels the key to his health and his ability to play 150-plus games is to not ramp it up in spring training. He learned that lesson during the lockout spring. And that even goes to tell you, the lockout spring was, what, a two-week run, two-and-a-half-week run? And the quality of play, Mets got off to a great start. The quality of play didn't suffer. And these guys, they do so much on their own that really the adrenaline and the strategy and all the intensity of the regular season. They want to save that for the regular season now. It's truly like that. So Trace Thompson, I find it hard to believe he's going to make the club unless there's an injury of some sorts. Tyrone Taylor at this point, to me, he's a guy that was acquired from Milwaukee. He's ticketed to be the fourth outfielder. Now, could Trace Thompson be in play for the DH? I'm still not sure because right now, Beatty he's looked a little bit better defensively at third, still not hitting. Vientos popped a home run, playing not a great third. I really think Vientos and Beatty are going to have such a huge say on how things transpire with maybe a Trace Thompson getting a more serious look, a Luke Voit, a G-Man Choi. I mean, that's another guy. And when he first signed, I was like, they're just using him for a lottery ticket in spring training. I think he has a far more serious chance of making the club because when you look at him, when he's healthy and he plays every day, he hits right-handed pitching at a high level. He gets on base at a high level. He has some pop. He could play a really good first base so he could caddy for Pete Alonso. Pretty much play the role that Dom Smith here had, but Dom Smith didn't hit. Here, Choi hits a little bit, and I know he had a down year last year and he had some injuries, but DJ Stewart is going to have to work to make this club because he had a good August last year, but his resume largely is 4A. Choi is a guy, now he can't play the outfield, but if you look at the Mets outfield right now and the versatility of McNeil, you can carry Choi because McNeil could play the outfield. You have Nimmo, you have Harrison Bader, you have a healthy Marte who looked good the other day, you have Tyrone Taylor. So you have enough with McNeil's versatility outfielders, and you need someone to spell Pete. And Choi to me is a guy that's going to get a really deep look, and I think he has a really good shot at making the club. Really good shot. A little bit of that Vogelbach rough syndrome with Choi, where you have to play him against one side of the, basically the right-handed pitcher. But can you see Vientos and Choi making the club? Probably not both, because if Choi makes it, he makes it. I could see both, because then he'll make it instead of Stewart. And I guess then you'd have like a Choi-Vientos DH combo with Beatty at third. But it'll be interesting if those guys continue to not hit and not look anywhere near ready for prime time. Where would the Mets go with third base and what's the ripple effect? Because there's really no other third base option. Why, Zach Short? I mean, I brought him up at Beyond the Mic. That was an interesting, fun spot to do for the newsletter. But that's not the direction you necessarily want to go with a 4A guy. I know Stearns put his name in the mix there. So early on, Trace Thompson, Darren Reed Award, not making the club but having a great spring. G-Man Choi, take his roster battle much more seriously against DJ Stewart. Jury's still out on Vientos and Beatty. We've seen a little bit better defense from Beatty. Hit a home run from Vientos, but more to come. And they're facing double-A level. According to this metric over at Baseball Reference, both those guys are facing double-A level competition. So when I see Beatty hitting .154, that doesn't exactly make me feel good about where he is on the developmental curve. Now, one of the biggest things that I've been ranting and raving about, Mets player development's been an issue on many fronts. We know that. Few lottery tickets they hit on, like the Pete Alonzos, the McNeils of the world. But by and large, they've had to go out and really plug in pretty much every part of their roster with either a trade or a free agent. And it's why they have such a big payroll. It's why they have to take this more conservative approach this past off season. The bullpen particularly is where it's driven me nuts because I feel like one of the only teams that could never develop a failed starter into reliever or develop any kind of elite relievers. The Dodgers do it all the time. The Rays do it all the time. It seems like even the Braves get guys that come up. The Yankees all the time. And it's like, where are the Mets? But now, last week, and he does remind me of Billy Wagner. I know that's what the booth talked about. Ron Darling said it right away when he pitched last week. But Nate Lavender is somebody who we've heard a little bit about from our friend Ernie Dove, our good friend that does all the Mets prospects and follows the Mets prospects. We've heard about him as being one of the names to watch, as well as Paul Gervais, to potentially be getting the early call to the big league club. And this is a kid that had a halfway decent year in Syracuse last year. strikeouts almost 14 per 9, 3.27 ERA. His walk rate's still high, almost 5 per 9. But when you see this kid, not only does he throw like Billy Wagner, but he doesn't have a very heavy, he has a heavy fastball, not a fast fastball. He's got a little bit of deception with maybe this little herky-jerky, you know, Nestor Cortez slash Marcus Stroman, you know, kind of delay or stutter, whatever you want to call it, with his foot. Nate Lavender is starting to make you wonder, can he sneak into the conversation for the pen? A bullpen that right now pretty much set because you're going to lose guys. Fujinami is the only one with options. And, I mean, think about it. What are the odds he's not going to make the club if he's ready? I know he was in Japan tending to personal business. Jeremy Hefner is talking about how he could be an all-star closer with his stuff. If you could harness Fujinami's stuff with Diaz, that electricity in the eighth and ninth could make this really special. And then if you get like a Lavender, even a Drew Smith to finally harness their potential, then maybe all of a sudden the Mets have a low-cost option in the bullpen. Now, with Fujinami being lefty and Lavender being lefty and Diekman being lefty, you got a lot of lefties in the pen already. And you got Brooks Raley. You really don't need another lefty. Now, I know in the three-batter rule world, lefties all of a sudden, if they go both ways, the situation, a lefty situation is persona non grata. But I see Lavender as a guy, and maybe it's not Trace Thompson. Maybe he comes out and wins the Darren Reed Award this spring and doesn't make the club, but lights out. Big difference is Trace Thompson is a journeyman, and I'm not sure how much of a shot he'll get if he doesn't make the club. Lavender will probably be up in short time because inevitably there will be a need for another reliever on a doubleheader or rainout or an injury or who knows what's going to happen, as you know we've already seen with the Senga injury, which what could happen when it comes to the long baseball season. So other names to look out the rest of the spring, Deadneal Nunez. He was actually a Rule 5 draft away from the Mets to the Giants, and they sent him back. He's had Tommy John surgery. Probably would have been in the big leagues already if not for injuries. Wilkin Ramos, Junior Santos. These are names that potentially, and I think there are others, that are starting to percolate, and you look at them, and the Mets may have minor league options that are legit options in the bullpen. And as soon as, you know, now, which is a nice place to be because they really haven't been in that place in a long time. So there's that with the whole thing. But, you know, it's hard right now to make any declaration about anybody because, like I said, if you go up and down, and I found this metric fascinating over at Baseball Reference, everybody's really facing when you get out of that first couple of innings when the starters play, if they all travel, depending if it's a road game, you know, the other team doesn't always send everybody, you're really facing, on average, double-A competition. And that doesn't really lend itself to you feeling good about getting excited about anything. But you got a lot of smart guys there on the coaching staff and in the front office, and I'm sure they've got their algorithms, their videos, and their way of evaluating. And soon enough, we'll find out what's materializing, where the battles are going. I had said coming into the spring, there's not as many positional battles as you'd think. I still believe that to be the case. I think third base is still very much up for grabs. I think DJ Stewart has to really hustle to win a spot. Even as a DH, I think Choi, like I said, has an excellent shot at making this club because his resume is better, and the math indicates that he'll get on base enough and produce enough to be valuable in that bottom part of the lineup, whereas DJ Stewart could do the same thing, maybe better, but just hasn't done it on his resume as consistently as Choi. And the glove, I think, could be a deciding factor. So to me, that might be the first surprise, Choi, this spring. And then, of course, like I said, the excitement, and we only saw them for a week, and now they're back in the minor leagues, and they may make their appearances at some point if they need some additional bodies at a big league game at some point this spring. But the Gilbert, Acuna, Jet Williams trio, I think they're going to be a story. And I think I have my gut tells me we're going to see at least one of those guys this year. And I think it's very realistic that two out of three make some kind of debut this year. I really believe Jet Williams is going to push himself into the conversation. We may see all three. And you may have a controversy if Marte and McNeil are playing well. I mean, you could even say this. Do you put McNeil a third if, and that's not his best position, if Beatty's not cutting the mustard, and bring up an Acuna to play second? I mean, because that's the other part with this whole third base situation. You didn't sign Matt Chapman. I'm not saying they should have. It would have been nice to go on a pillow contract like that with the uncertainty of Beatty's performance. But you don't want to lose the draft pick compensation for Chapman. And there was enough reason to believe that maybe his game has declined a little bit, even on the defensive side. So 1 week in the books, not a lot to talk about, but some fun early conversations around the kids, around positional battles, and of course, the new culture around the Mets, the Mendoza-Stearns era, has begun. And we're starting to hear a little bit about their method of going about their daily business. So anyway, want to thank everybody for tuning in to this Grapefruit Roundup, our first Grapefruit Roundup post-game starting. We kicked off spring training a week ago, but now we're doing the Grapefruit Roundups. Every week, we'll be doing the Grapefruit Roundups, so stay tuned for more Grapefruit Roundups every week. And, you know, look, hopefully there won't be injuries to talk about, but hopefully there'll be more performances that make it difficult for us to forecast the final 26-man roster, because if there's tough decisions to be made, guys are performing well, and that's an exciting thing. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silvat, talkingmetspodcast.com, No G, Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me at the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting the show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody. Be the Mets. Be the Mets.